Welcome back. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Clear summer nights are short but sweet if the skies are clear. We're talking about that today with the director of the Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory, Tom Burns. Welcome back.
For today, though.
Just for today. This is it. This is it. Today is your last day on that job. Now, it is paid, but very...
Tomorrow they want
minorly.
The keys back.
25 years working or volunteering and working there
that
for
is,
the last
well,
10 years have you been director?
For the last 25 years I've been director.
Oh, okay.
Although at the beginning I got the title of assistant director so they could pay me less. And there was no actual director of Perkins Observatory, but it was a way of saving some money.
Perkins Observatory, for people who are unfamiliar, tell us about where it is and what it is.
It is an observatory owned by Ohio Wesleyan University, which, by the way, is a very fine university.
Located,
you should send your children there when they graduate from high school. There, I got the plug in. I feel much better. Where was I? Oh, yes, owned by Ohio Wesleyan University for many years. Operated by Ohio State University until they pulled out in 1998. And it has been the home of much research in astronomy over the years. Plus, since I became director, many thousands of public programs for the youngest person we ever had at the youngest group we ever had at the observatory was a bunch of 3 and 4 year olds and up to however, you know, seniors, everybody in between.
It's located in Delaware County, which is like, if not the fastest growing county in the universe, one of the fastest growing counties in the universe, as we know it. How do you still see the same things when there's so much light around?
Well, you keep track of what developers are coming into Delaware County, and you go and talk with them and arrange for intelligent lighting. That is, you know, we just have a simple principle in mind here that the street and parking lot lights should point down at the street and parking lot.
Bizarre.
It's a crazy idea, but it might just work. Also, there are certain kinds of lights that don't interfere with the observing and the research as much as others do. You want you don't want to spread the light out over the whole spectrum of light. You want to make that light as kind of low frequency and in certain bands of the spectrum that we can filter out as possible. And it can be done. You can now observe in the middle of the city if you have the technology to do it. But it's a lot more difficult in the middle of the city. And we do want people to have an authentic experience of the nighttime sky, not one that's filtered through computer screens and things like that. We want them to go up to that eyepiece, look at the rings of Saturn, and go, I can't believe it's real. And it's harder to do that on a screen than it is when you're seeing it with your own eyeball.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's a very special day today. Our guest is Tom Burns, director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory, for today only.
Call in. Ask a question. Yeah. Make it an easy one. Yeah. I'm tired. I'm so
He's winding down, folks. If you have a question for Tom Burns, maybe you have a memory of Tom Burns. Maybe you were one of those first grade classes that came, one of the hundreds or thousands of first grade classes that have come to visit Perkins over the year and have been treated to a program by Tom Burns. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We would love to hear about your memories. And of course,
Go ahead. Sorry.
If you have questions, he's interrupting me. And this is, you know, if you have questions for Tom about the night sky, Give us a call as well. Yes, Tom.
I just wanted to say one of the most heartwarming and depressing things that happens to me, and this happens all the time. So people walk up to me before the program. I was usually sitting at the front desk, and they'll say, "Yeah, I came here in the fifth grade, and here's my daughter,
here's Karen, my granddaughter.
And she, and I'm bringing her up, granddaughter.
No,
yes, and
depressing.
Yes, that's right, grandchildren."
That does not depress you.
No, it doesn't.
I know it
at
doesn't.
All.
It thrills you. You wrote a couple columns about your favorite questions from children. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah.
It's like Art Linkletter type.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny because kids will ask me, "How big is that?" And I'll try to find some analog, like, "How big is the sun? You can put 1,300,000 Earths inside the sun." And I'm saying that, and I'm saying, you know, I can't even guess how many jelly beans there are in the jar at the Ohio State Fair. So how's that going to make sense? So you take them outside and you make a little scale model. Earth is the size of this pinhead, and the sun is the size of this volleyball. So my favorite questions are the ones kids are really sincere about them. They really want to know how big. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of kids expect you to give them a number, but the number makes absolutely no sense. It's just something maybe some teacher made them memorize, and they want to see if you got it right. You know what I mean? And but the trouble with that question is if you come up with an answer like, "How many Earths will fit inside of Jupiter?" 1,486. Then they'll say, "Well, how many Neptunes will fit inside of Jupiter?" And you go, "Oh, why did I go down this road?"
Work that one
you
out.
Know, let's see. His mind quickly goes to the volume of a sphere and what's the radius of Neptune and what's the radius of Jupiter. It's that kind of question that's fun because you almost expect it, but still, the kids are kind of come up with an angle on it that you hadn't expected. You know, like, "How many Plutos will fit inside of Uranus?" Which, by the way, they almost always pronounce incorrectly.
Yeah,
because
that's the way
purpose.
We were raised to pronounce it incorrectly. A lot of us. You know that.
Hey, you haven't lived until you've been standing in a line up at the big telescope with like 90 third graders, and every third grader asks, "Can I see Uranus in that?" To which my response is, "I've never heard that question before." Oh, no, wait a minute. I've heard it at least 100,000 times.
Oh, Bill in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Hi, guys. Tom, I was one of those 1994 Our Lady of Peace fourth grade class.
Our Lady of Peace, I remember it well. Yes, right.
Go ahead. Remember that particular night? But anyway, I did see the Ring Nebula for the first time. It started my adult interest in astronomy. And I'm just curious if you can quantify or qualify, whichever is the correct term, how dark the sky was when you started at Perkins versus today. I know you talked about the battle to keep down the adjacent light, but would you say you're winning or losing, or you've lost 20% of the sky? I don't know if you can qualify that.
Well, it's difficult to quantify, but I'd say we've maybe lost 10 or 20%, maybe a little more. I don't know. It's really hard to judge. But lately, we're holding our own. That is, we find that the developers are much more sympathetic. Back in the day, back when I started in 93, yes, you know, the developers weren't so sympathetic because what the heck was Perkins Observatory to them? Mm. But now Perkins sort of is one of the things in Delaware County that
people
love.
Yeah.
People love it, you know? And so we're a lot more we get a lot more sympathy from the developers, I think, because as I said to one guy who was bringing in a car dealership, I said, you know, I think you should ask yourself if you want to be the guy who closed Perkins Observatory. Gosh.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Bill, thanks a lot for that question. Anybody else out there, questions for our special guest today? Tom Burns, director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory for one more day today. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. So have the children changed much over the years?
You know what? They have not. As a matter of fact, they still have that curiosity. They still have the kind of innocent intelligence that I'm afraid, you know, life may beat out of them, but we're doing our best to light that spark and keep it burning. You know what I mean? If I have a goal in life, it's to make that third grader just as goofy and wonderful and smart and skeptical as when they're 60 as when they were in the third grade.
I think one of the things that's made you such a great guest over the years has been your literacy. You're an English professor at Ohio Wesleyan.
I are a English teacher.
You am a English professor, and you express yourself so beautifully. What's it like to talk to kids about this kind of stuff?
Hey, I am a rhetorician by trade, believe it or not. And the first rule of rhetoric is adapt your message to the needs of your audience. We had a group of 4 and 5 year olds at the observatory last week. And I did my launching my rockets routine. And by the end of it, they were just in stitches. They were rolling in the aisle. It was great. And by the end of it, they knew what Newton's third law of motion was.
What was it?
Because you know, for every action,
oh,
there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Oh, okay.
See, my goal is they learn it when they're 5 and they never forget it. And how we do it, or how I do it, is, you know, I have them stand up. When you stand up, you have to push down with your legs for your head to go up. You have to push down to go up. And then I demonstrate in slow motion how when you're walking, you have to push back with one foot to go forward with the other. You have to push backward to go forward. You have to push down to go up. When you're launching the bottle rocket, the cork goes down, the bottle goes up. Newton's third law of motion. Simple. Even a 4-year-old can understand it if you have the heart of a 4-year-old. And some would say the mind of a 4-year-old. But I don't care. You know, when I'm with those kids, I'm thinking like a 4-year-old. That's, I think, the key to any good teaching. First rule of rhetoric, adapt your message to the needs of your audience. And if that means making funny faces when you're shoving the cork in the bottle,
by golly,
then make funny faces, I say. And even if they aren't faces you would normally make, even if they're exaggerations of the faces you're making already, if you know what I mean, then do it, because the kids will not be embarrassed for you. The teachers might be a little, some of them. The smart ones won't
be,
though.
They get it. My guest is Tom Burns, director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory. Today's his last day on the job. If you have a question or comment, a memory to share of Tom, he's spoken with groups of first graders for 25 years now and goes back a few generations, right? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can just check out the Facebook page and do that post your question or your comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Clear summer nights, short but sweet. If you can stay up late enough, there's lots to see in the night sky. That is, if it's not raining, and it is raining, but Mars, Jupiter, Venus, and Saturn are all still visible. You can see all four at the same time if you're lucky. And if you're lucky, you're listening right now live. If you have a question for our special guest, director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory, Tom Burns, today. He's retiring from that job after 25 years. He also is a professor of English and creative writing at Ohio Wesleyan University, and he will be continuing to do that job, and he'll also be doing jobs at the observatory as well. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. Friday is kind of you're going to be doing a program on Friday, and you're going to be giving a talk. It's kind of a special event to honor you.
Well, Friday night, I will be giving my farewell address. Well, you know, my farewell talk, where I kind of sum things up, but it'll be a variation of my usual nickel tour of the universe. Okay. We'll talk about the planets, of course, but we're going to start right here from good old planet Earth and work our way upward and outward to the edge of everything that is a place we call our universe.
Space. Can anybody go?
Yes.
Okay.
You can call the Perkins number, 740-363-1257. That's 740-363-1257. And talk to Don, who will be interim director after today, and arrange for some tickets for yourself. And I hope you'll come Friday night. We're doing the planets all through August. That
okay.
is a four-planet extravaganza. Four of the five naked eye planets in telescopes. But I hope you'll come this coming Friday, August 3rd, because, you know, it's kind of a nostalgic moment for me. It'll be nice to meet some of you folks out there in Radio Land who I've never seen your faces, and I'd love to see your
faces. I'm sure you have. For more information, you can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides for more information about that event on Friday, August 3rd. Is Tom Burns' last day on the job today, and we were so lucky to get you booked in before that, just kind of, you know, the novelty of it, I suppose.
Yeah, it was you or the dentist, Dan. Figured, what the heck.
Email from Brad. He said, I wanted to thank Tom for representing Delaware, Ohio so wonderfully for so long on the radio. I grew up in Delaware and have always been aware of the observatory right there on 23. It was great hearing Tom's tips on things like viewing the eclipse and other phenomena. Where would Tom go in the U.S. or around the world to view the next big event before the 2024 eclipse that can evidently be seen perfectly in Marion, Ohio? Does Tom have a bucket list?
Yes, that is correct. As a matter of fact, the center line passes over Perkins Observatory. It passes over northwest Columbus, and it passes smack dab right over Marion, Ohio.
It's a solar eclipse.
It's a solar eclipse. Total eclipse. The next one visible in the United States, I think the date, I'm not sure, is April 24th, 2024. Does the word April mean anything to you?
April showers.
Yes. Bring grave disappointment when it comes to looking at eclipses.
Now, it could be a perfect day.
Now, you know, I'm going to watch the weather forecast, like if I'm still on the planet, like nobody else in the world. However, I will have all my plans made to make the mad dash down to Mexico or Texas. The eclipse line, instead of going from west to east,
like
this time
last summer,
goes north-south, or from north or from south to north. So we'll be ready to make the mad dash across country again, should we need to. and all of those arrangements will be made. I might take a cruise for this one again. I don't know. No, I'm not sure I can. Anyway.
Sue in Columbus, you're on the air with Tom Burns. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
I wanted to add a memory that is not directly about the observatory. I attended a talk you gave to the Columbus Latin Club years ago, where you talked about the classical connections to the constellations.
Yes.
Yeah, that was down at Columbus State. So you are not just dealing with a group of small children, but you also had to deal with a group of adults, mostly Latin teachers, Latin and Greek faculty members. And
a wild crowd, I'm sure.
I remember that talk very well because the battery on my laptop had about 10% power in it. But no, I love that topic, as a matter of fact. One of my things is seeing the sky from all different points of view, including from the standpoint of culture and classical mythology, not just science. Mm. The science nerds sometimes don't like that so much, but I love telling the old stories because it tells us so much about the way we were and, just between you and me, the way we are.
Sue, thanks for – was it a happy, fun time?
I'm sorry?
It was a good time that night?
Of course it was. Yeah, it was Tom.
It was
Waka
Tom.
Waka. Hey, and those stories, if you tell them unexpurgated, are really, really good, too. And you can get away with that with a bunch of Latin scholars and teachers.
Sue, thanks for your call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Tom Burns, director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory, for today only, after 25 years in the job. One more day only.
Hey, now I can volunteer, which is what I intend to do. It's a little payback for all the volunteers from the Columbus Astronomical Society who've helped at Perkins. So I'll be one of them out on the front lawn. I've been a member of the Columbus Astronomical Society for a lot longer than I have been director of Perkins Observatory. Thank you very much.
Duly noted. Let's see. Charlie in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, guys. Well, first of all, thanks to Tom for so many years of wit, entertainment, and knowledge. His understanding of the skies has made it so fun for families and parents and kids. And here's my question. I have a four-year-old, just turning four, and, you know, it's so important not to expose them to things before they can appreciate it, but not wait too long. So I'm wondering what the time frame is or the programming for those younger kids.
I'd say if you're talking about the kind of basic concepts of astronomy, four is about where I'd go. When I do three-year-olds, I generally do mostly star stories, how did the bunny get in the moon, things like that. But for four-year-olds, you begin to introduce concepts like when we did the sun the other day, we had them look at the sun with eclipse glasses. It's for 4 and 5 year olds, and talked about why the sun looked so little in the sky when it was so big. And you can really begin to do astronomy on that level.
Charlie, thanks a lot for that call. Katie in Columbus, you're on the air with Tom Burns of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I just wanted to say Tom was one of the first guests I'd ever heard on Ann Fisher, and immediately his voice and charisma attracted me in, and anytime I'm driving, I hear his voice. I sit in the car a little bit longer. I take my phone and play it wherever I'm going.
I'm a driveway moment guy. I'm so excited. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're one of the people I bring with me into the house. So I know it's your last day, but I was hoping that maybe you'll be on the show again in the future, because I just want to keep hearing you talk about space for a long time.
Oh, well, you
what
know.
What do you say, Tom Burns?
If they ask me, I
and
will.
You know we will.
I will come rushing down, even if I'm just wearing my pajamas at the last minute, right? Because, I've been doing this now since. My first appearance was on Fred's show
back in
1985. I've been
slot. In September, it'll be 9 years.
Well, how about
and you
that,
were one yeah. of my first guests.
How about that?
Yeah. Katie, thanks for listening and thanks for the call.
Thanks so much for the great show.
You bet. Let's see. We got Mike here from Columbus. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, I just want to reiterate that, you know, your personality and your enthusiasm is contagious, and I really enjoy listening to you.
Well, thank you very much. I will. You know, the simple fact is people keep saying, now that you're retiring, what are you going to do? Well, you know what? I'm going to take a little walk from the Lake Erie down to the Ohio River along the Ohio to Erie bike trail as a fundraiser for Perkins Observatory. And then after that, I'm just going to keep on doing what I'm doing. The only difference is I won't be getting paid for it. That's all.
Mike, did you have a question, too? I saw that you might have a question for Tom.
And I hope I can get my point across here. When I look at the night sky and I see a star and I see the light from that star, I understand that it's a light that was burned in a million years ago or whatever the time frame is. But my question is it possible that that star, that individual star that we're seeing and the light that we're looking at from a million years ago, if that star isn't in different positions because of the way light travels, in other words, I'm looking at one star, but it's the same star in three or four different positions because of the light coming from it.
Well, the star has moved. All stars are spinning around the center of the Milky Way galaxy, including the sun. And they have a rather, you know, kind of chaotic motion. They're not all moving parallel to each other. So that star is not where... if there is such a thing as now, my argument is there really, the now is an illusion. But if you're asking if that star is in that position now, no, it is not. The light that you are seeing is a collection of maybe, you know, a million photons or whatever that are entering your eyeballs at that moment. The star has moved. But that light hasn't gotten to you yet and won't get to you for another 1,000 years or whatever. So you're seeing the star the way it was, but you can only see that star in one position because the light has to travel to get to you. And once those photons hit your eyeball, you have to wait for more light to get to you to see the star in a different position.
Mike, does that answer your question?
Well, I'm in a way, but what I'm asking is that light that we're seeing, that from that particular star, okay, so it's in position one tonight, and there's a star maybe just to the left of it. Is it possible that I'm seeing the same light from the same star in different positions, or can I only see the light from one position?
No, because you only see the light at one moment. That is, you're only seeing the light from that star when you're seeing it at that moment. So, if the star has moved, then you have to wait for that light to get to you. You're only ever seeing that star. You can't see that star in two different positions.
At the same time.
At the same time. Because you're only collecting light through your eyeballs at any given moment.
Mike, thanks for that call. That question that's kind of...
ooh,
yeah.
One of those kinds of things. No, the fact is there is no now. You're always seeing the universe in the past. Every experience you have is an experience of the past. Even looking at you across this table, you looking at me, it takes a fraction of a second for the sound, for the sight to get to you. the farther away you are, the farther in the past you're seeing. That's the beauty of the telescope. It's more than just a farseer, a way of making far things seem closer. It's a time machine that helps us to see into the distant past, to the beginnings, in fact, of everything that is. Now is an illusion.
Mars, Jupiter, Venus, and Saturn are going to be all out all at once in August. Is this pretty unusual?
Not particularly. Okay. The planets orbit the sun, they go at different velocities as they orbit the sun, and some of them take a long time, and some of them take a lot longer time, and so eventually, like cars speeding around in a race, mm-hmm. around a track, they're going to be close together sometimes from the point of view of any given car.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have are five of the five bright planets in the sky at the same time. Mercury, which is not getting too close to the sun to see. Venus, which is visible over there, setting in the west in the evening. If you haven't seen it, go out in twilight and look west. There she is, the goddess of love and beauty. And as it gets darker and Venus is setting, you'll be able to see Jupiter over by Zubinel Ganubi. I've learned to pronounce Zubinel Ganubi just for this show in the constellation Lyra. Then right above the teapot of Sagittarius, the planet Mars, and then rising in the southeast, Saturn, and then rising in the southeast, the red planet Mars, which is now at opposition, which is just a way of saying it's as close to us as it has been since 2003.
There you go. We're talking with Tom Burns, director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory. I haven't taken any phone calls because guess what? There aren't any. Well, there is one. I'll get to that as soon as we return. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. It's Tom's last day on the job, sort of. He'll be volunteering after this, and he'll be doing programs at Perkins. But if you haven't, and he'll certainly, I hope, be back on this program as well. But 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about stars, constellations, planets, and beyond. Still with us, director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory, Tom Burns. He, today, after 25 years, today is his last day on the job. He'll still be volunteering and doing all kinds of things. Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory holds a stargazing event this Saturday, August 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Friday,
August 3rd. Sorry about that. Looking at four of the five naked eye planets, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, and hearing from Tom in a farewell address. For more information, check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Let's see. Where or how might one wanting to learn more about astronomy do so? This is an email from Art. He says, is there a recommended Astronomy 101 course out there that's easily accessible?
I have to say, I had my greatest success joining the Columbus Astronomical Society.
They don't care if you're a newbie?
Oh, they love newbies.
Okay.
Because they were all newbies. So that there is this real sense. I was a newbie. I drove the big old telescope I had just built.
Yeah, but
plugged
you were,
it on the lawn of Perkins Observatory.
Yeah, but you were, you know, this is somebody asking, you know, if they just want to
there was this guy from the Columbus Astronomical Society, Charlie Hafey, and he showed me how to find some stuff. And we talked about astronomy, and then I went to astronomy club meetings, and I listened to the talks. This is the only real official astronomy I have ever done. And there's just that sense, belonging to an astronomy club. And by the way, astronomy clubs do offer the equivalent of Astronomy 101 periodically. I know the Columbus Astronomical Society does. And there is that sense of mentorship and that you get that gives you more than just the book knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's that sense of participating in the life of the cosmos. Mm. And that kind of personal one-on-one relationship, I will never forget that night because I had struggled with this for years since I was a kid. And that night, I felt like I belonged to the universe and the universe belongs to me. Thanks, Charlie, wherever you are.
Michael in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is my question. Here I am standing on a clear day. The sun is in the sky, and 90 degrees to the left of it, the first quarter moon is there. I imaginarily draw a line down the visible side of the moon and square off it to the right towards the sun. It seems to appear above it. Now, my question about this phenomenon, which many say is an illusion, is that while I've met many people who'll explain it to me, none of them have ever said they've observed it. Now, has anybody proved it?
Exactly what were you seeing?
It looks as if when you if you take that first quarter moon that's visible in the day sky and you draw a line down the visible light part of it, mm-hmm, and then square off it to the right, you'd think it would point to the sun, but it always appears as if it's pointing above the sun by about 5 to 10 degrees.
Well, what you have to do is imagine what the line that we're talking about is actually a curved line. It appears to be curved because the sky appears to be curved, called the ecliptic. And the moon isn't always on that line. That's the line that the sun appears to take as it passes around the sky, and that takes as it passes against the starry background, and that, of course, takes a year as Earth travels around the sun. Well, the moon is traveling around the Earth, and there is a slight tilt to its orbit. So the moon is near that line, but it isn't always on that line. As a matter of fact, when it's on that line, you get some sort of eclipse. So you've got two lines that we're talking about. We're talking about the orbit of the moon as it appears to move around the sky, as it moves around the Earth. And you're talking about a second kind of imaginary line as the sun travels around the sky, as Earth travels around the sky. And those lines intersect during eclipses, or those are called the nodes. And that's they do intersect twice a year. But if you're expecting them to be the same line, understand this. The moon's Earth, or the moon's orbit is tilted 23 degrees. So those two lines are not going to be identical. They're going to be tilted with respect to each other, and you wouldn't expect them to line up all the time.
Michael, thanks a lot for that call. Thanks for listening.
This is a lot easier to do on the board, as it were. Sorry about that. But they're two completely separate orbits, put it that way.
Steve in Columbus, you're on the air with Tom Burns. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi. My question is that you mentioned earlier, you said the light, for example, from the moon we see now is from a past.
Yes.
So my question is that the moon I see, for example, tonight, is the moon yesterday. Not tonight.
No, no. Okay. The moon when you look at the moon at that moment, you're seeing the moon at 250,000 miles away, carry the three, about 1 1/3 seconds before that moment. That is, it takes the light from the moon. That's how close the moon is. It only takes 1 1/3 seconds to get from there to here. So it's not a matter of days with the moon. It's a matter of just about 1 second. You want days? Go with, Pluto.
Okay. Steve, thanks a lot for that call.
No, wait a minute. Pluto wouldn't work either.
Would anything work?
That's the thing. Days is tough. Hours in the solar system and then years outside of it. Days, it'd be tough to get.
It goes from years
It goes from days. Days to how huddled together the solar system is.
It goes from hours
to years like that. There really isn't anything that matches days. Maybe something way, way out there in the Oort cloud of icy objects far, far away from the sun.
Here is another caller who wants to talk about how great you are. Sylvia in Columbus, you're on the air.
Garsh.
Hi, Sylvia.
Thanks.
Well, I want to congratulate Tom on his retirement. And I studied environmental interpretation at Ohio State a few years back. I had a 16-year career as a naturalist.
Ah.
And I think that two of the finest interpreters I have ever heard are you and Dale Ganitovic, and you exemplify the principles of interpretation of environmental interpretation like nobody else I know, and two of those being the enthusiasm, the passion that's so contagious, and the ability to explain things in terms people understand, and tailoring your explanation for your audience, and starting with something that people know, you know, like what you were saying about when you stand up, you have to push down your feet, and that was a great example. And what you just explained about the moon, I thought that was a great explanation for radio without having the visuals to rely on.
I was drawing on the microphone.
He was waving his arms all over the place.
I'm sure. I could see you doing that.
Yeah, you can rewatch it and just watch it later in the same passage.
Sun's orbit. Where's the camera?
He's like, dude, it's like a chop.
Moon's
orbit. It's like karate chopping in the air all over the place.
They're not the same.
Thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. I'm sorry. Iris in North Linden, you're on the air. Hi, Iris.
Hi. Tom, could you please tell us about your remembrance of watching the American astronauts on the moon back in July of 69?
Oh, I remember it. Oh, gosh. I was working at the Burger Chef. I was working the late shift until about 1 a.m. because, you know, even after the place closes, somebody has to clean the shake machine and stuff. So I was there alone with the manager, and he was tired. He wanted to get out of there, and they're going to land on the moon. So I said, I brought along one of those little portable black and white TVs with the screen about 5 inches in diameter. And I said, listen, I know you want to get home.
And this isn't a handheld computer. Go ahead.
And I want to clean the shake. I really want to clean the shake machine, but I kind of like to watch the landing on TV. And he said, no. He said, you got to clean the shake machine first. I said, this is happening right now. He said, no, you got to clean the shake machine. I said, I quit. He said, okay, go ahead and watch it, because he didn't want to clean the shake machine. So I sat there and watched on TV, and I heard them say the eagle has landed and all that, and it was just unforgettable.
Yeah.
And I was 16 years old and working at the Burger Chef. That's the short answer.
Okay, Iris. Thanks for your call.
I was Jeff. Remember Burger Chef and Jeff?
Burger Chef. Let's see. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks.
Hey, I was calling to the gentleman that called about seeing stars in two different positions.
Uh-huh.
So say that there's a large gravitational mass that goes around it. It will bend that light, correct?
Yes, that's correct. It is possible, if you have a really big telescope, that if you look at a big distant galaxy, you will see images of two, sometimes four, sometimes more, images of the same galaxy around the foreground galaxy. As the light from that galaxy, it's one burst of light, but that light is bent around the galaxy.
Why?
And you get multiple images of the galaxy.
How does that
because
happen?
Gravity changes the trajectory of light. That is, if you have a powerful enough gravitational center there, that it will bend the light around it. That's the power of gravity, my friends. It even changes the position and the trajectory of light.
Mark, thanks a lot for your call. Shelby in Westerville. Hi, Shelby.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I had some question on advice for drawing star charts. So I enjoy going out and taking a piece of paper and making a chart, but I realized towards the end my scale is not accurate at all. Like when I start either too big or too small and it doesn't quite fit. So my question is, do you have any advice on how to make a better kind of scale?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I do this all the time, as a matter of fact. The thing is to measure. And you know, I've known people who use, kind of hold rulers up to the sky. If you hold it up at the same distance, arm outstretched, that'll work for you. But I tend to use the fist method. That is, your little finger, your fist, two fingers, three fingers, your fist with your thumb stretched out and the pinky stretched out. These all match up to a certain number of degrees. My little finger, for example, is about 2 degrees of arc, like that. But you don't have to know the degree part. You can just use your fist with your arm stretched out to measure the distance from one star to the next. And I strongly recommend doing that. If you're going to, and then you can, it's easier to do, and you can do more complex method like hold up a ruler or with a red flashlight or something like that. But you need to get the scale, and there are lots of ways of getting it. Use some familiar object like your fist. Make sure your arm is always stretched out all the way when you're doing it, though.
Shelby, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it. Real quick, email from Elizabeth. She says, where's the best dark skies viewing location within a 4 to 6 hour driving distance from Central Ohio?
Well, it's funny you should ask that question, as a matter of fact, because a good buddy of mine and member of the Columbus Astronomical Society, former president Brad Haney, is now the director of an observatory that he built from the ground up, designed beautifully down in the Hocking Hills, funded with efforts by the Friends of the Hocking Hills. They raised $1.5 million to build this thing. It's called the John Glenn Astronomy Park. And let's just say, Friday night, I'm at Perkins, if it's clear. Saturday night, I'm at the John Glenn Astronomy Park, if it's clear.
I guess so. You're giving it a thumbs up.
There are darker skies in Ohio, but you won't find a place amenable to astronomy in the way that this place is. And it's pretty dark.
Tom Burns, we are out of time. You will join us again, but not as the director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory. So thank you so much for squeezing us in today. We appreciate it. I know it's a special time.
Always a pleasure.
That's Tom Burns. As I said, today is his last day as director of Ohio Wesleyan University Perkins Observatory, but he'll still be there doing programs, including on Friday, August 3rd. For more information about that, check out the link at our website at WOSU.org. Thank you so much for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.